start from the very bottom of Yud Ches Amud Beis, the last line of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Rabba Bar Bar Chana Irkas Le Gita Be Midrasha. Rabba was given a get to deliver to a woman, and he lost the get in the base medrash. Amar, Isi Mana Isli Begavei, Itavius Ena Isli Begavei. He wasn't concerned about getting the get back, because he said, for one of two reasons, they're going to return the get to me. Either because I have a simon, I can provide a simon for the get, as we know, as we're going to talk a lot about in the next parak, that's like the ABCs of Hashava Saveda. If you have a simon that you can provide, then obviously that's considered sufficient evidence to return the get. Or, even if I don't have a simon, but I have what's called tevius ayin. Tevius ayin basically just means visual recognition. Rabbi can say, yeah, that's the get I was supposed to deliver. The question is, how do you ever believe anyone? So we're going to talk about that in a second. So the Gemara says, ahadju ani ali. So they return the get to him. Amar, lo yadana imishum simana ahadju ani ali, v'kasavri simana de oraisa, imishum tevius ena ahadju ani ali, v'dafka tsurva midrabanan avul inish da'almalo. Rabbi was unsure what the reason was why they returned the get to him. Either it's because he provided a simon. If that's the case, so then obviously the people who returned the get were assuming simanin de oraisa. This is the whole discussion we're going to have again in the next parak. It came up a little bit also in Maseches Yevamos regarding the status of simanin in general. When we say that a person provides a simon and now we can get the item back, what's the status of that halacha? Is that a din de oraisa, or is that only a din de rabbanan? If you were to assume that simanin was only a din de rabbanan, that would not be a valid justification to return a get. A get needs to be valid mid de oraisa in order for the divorce to be effectuated. So the fact that they returned it based on simanin means that they assume simanin is d'oraisa. The other option is that no, that they relied on Rabba's tevius ayin, on his visual recognition. However, that notion that you can just rely on the fact that the guy said, yeah, that's my get, that only works for a Talmud Chacham, because we assume he's telling the truth. But for a regular guy, if a regular guy loses something and says, yeah, that's my item, you can't rely on him based on that. Okay, then where's this gufa? Matza get isha bashuk. Let's say you're walking on the street and you find the get. Bizman sha bal mode yachzir l'isham. If the husband says, yes, I wrote the get, I delivered the get, obviously my wife must have lost it, she must have misplaced it, then you can return the get back to the wife. But if the husband denies it, either he denies writing it or he denies giving it, whatever it was, then you can't return the get to either party. However, the Gemara says, Bizman shahabal modem miha yachzer laisha. If the husband admits that, yes, this is the get that I wrote and delivered to my wife, you can give her the get. The problem is, asks the Gemara, V'lecha shemakasav litein benisan v'lo nasan la'at tishrei, v'az This is a concern that we discussed extensively last week, and it's going to come up time and time again on today's daf in different contexts. Very simply put, the Gemara's concern is that, in other words, even if it were true that the husband wrote the get and he admitted to it and said, yes, I wrote it and delivered the get to my wife, well, why aren't we concerned for the following? Namely, that let's say the husband initially wrote the get in Nisan but didn't deliver the get until Tishrei, and now what's going to happen is that he's going to essentially use this get to repossess properties from various creditors or various purchasers unlawfully. What's the concern here exactly? What's the issue? Because we know that a husband has the rights to achilas pirus. As long as a husband is married, so if his wife brings certain property, nichse melug, into the marriage, the husband is entitled to eat the pirus. However, the husband also potentially has the rights to sell off that right, that, you know, that exclusive right to eat pirus. The husband can sell that right. However, he only has that right as long as he's married to his wife. So now the problem is that if we're unclear as to when the get was delivered in terms of the, in other words, in relation to the debt, to the date on the get. So the problem is that the husband may end up selling off the rights to consume the payros at a time when he wasn't justified in doing so. So the Gemara has to clarify even further. The Gemara says this question only gets off the ground if you take one of two approaches. There's a machlokas in the second parak of Gittin about this issue. One opinion says that once the husband decides to divorce his wife, even if he has not yet delivered the getter, that's it. He now forfeits the right to eat perus. So if you take that approach, so then the question makes a lot of sense, because we have to be concerned that really the husband was already planning to divorce his wife 6 months prior, and now when he's trying to sell off these rights to the purchasers, he never had the right to do that in the first place. However, if you take the other view in the Gemara and Gittin, that the husband is allowed to continue eating payrolls until he actually delivers the get to his wife, so then there's no concern here at all. There shouldn't be any issue. In other words, even if it were true that the husband had written the get 6 months prior, it doesn't matter. He's allowed to continue eating payrolls until he actually delivers the get. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ki asya lemitraf amrina la, I say, raya emas mata gita liyadcha. So the Gemara says like this. If, let's say, for example, the husband or the wife comes to try and repossess the property that her husband, that her ex-husband unlawfully sold off during the time when he wasn't supposed to do so. So we say to the wife, listen, you need to bring evidence. You have to prove when the get was delivered to you. Because again, it could very well be that the date written on the get was 6 months before you actually received it. So you're going to have to bring some kind of corroborating evidence, whether it's Edom or something else, to prove that, you know, the get was delivered on X date. So any produce that was sold by your ex-husband from that date when you can prove the get was delivered until now is going to be returned to you. So the Gemara says, but hang on a second. Umayishna mishtari chov. Disnan. Matzah shtari chov. Im yesh bahen achrayas nechazim lo yachzir. Ve'okimna kishachayav modeh. Umishum shema kosav lelavus benisan velo lava atishrei. Ve'katarif lekucho shalo kadin. Hasem nami li hadar. V'chi asei lemitraf neimalei. I say raya emas matzah shtar chov liadcha. The Gemara says, but hang on a second. Why is the case of a get so radically different from the case that we discussed last week of a shtar chov? The Mishnah back on Daf Yud Beis told us the following. Let's say you find a shtar chov. You find an IOU lying around in the street. So we said that if the shtar has what's called a chrayas nechasim, there's a property guarantee written into the shtar, you're still not allowed to return the shtar back to the malveh. And the Gemara back on Daf Yud Beis told us that's referring to a case even where the loveh concedes. He says, yes, I wrote the shtar chov. Reuven lent me the money. You're still not allowed to return the shtar to the malveh. Why not? So the Gemara explained, because of this ancillary concern that we keep on alluding to, that maybe the shtar chov was written 6 months before, but the loan was only administered 6 months later, and then what's going to happen is the malveh is going to end up repossessing land from the loveh's creditors unlawfully. The question is, well, hang on a second, didn't we just come up with a solution for that in the case of the get? In other words, return the shtar chov back to the malveh, let him take the shtar chov, and now when he comes knocking on the guys who bought the land off of the loveh, so just tell the malveh, listen, you need to prove the date on which the shtar was actually delivered to you, the same way that we invoke that concept by a get. Why doesn't the Gemara back with Daf Yud Beis invoke such an idea when it comes to a shtar chov? So the Gemara says, no, the cases of shtar chov and get are radically different. Amre, hacha gabe get isha, ase lokeach v'sava, amar hay dahadrua nihala rabbanan legita, mishum delo ta'agin v'seisev, hashtu de ka'astia lemitrav, tezel v'seise raya emas mata gita liada, hacha gabe shtar chov lo ase lokeach v'sava, mi dahadrua nihale rabbanan l'shtar chov, pshita l'may hilch The Gemara says like this. There's a very legitimate reason why Chazal would want to return a get back to an ex-wife, or in other words, even in a scenario where she's not necessarily going to use the date on that get to collect land that was unlawfully seized, and that's in order to avoid a potential problem of being an aguna. They didn't want the woman to be sitting there and chained down and not be able to be remarried. So in other words, that's the reason why Chazal allowed the finder to return the get back to the woman so that she can get remarried. If the woman now wants to act on that get and now go and repossess land that was theoretically unlawfully sold by her ex-husband, she needs more than just the get. She needs to prove the date on which she received the get, because now we're going above and beyond just overcoming a concern of aguna. We want her to actually prove legally and financially when she received the get. In contrast, when it comes to a shtar chov, if you see the shtar chov return to the malveh, so the guys who bought the land off the loveh, the creditors, they're going to assume that, of course, Chazal already did their due diligence. Why else would you be returning the shtar chov to the malveh? The only justification to be doing so is because Chazal said, yes, he has a legitimate taina. He needs to go and collect his debt. The loveh has no money. He has no property. He sold everything to us. He defaulted on the loan. So now we're the next target. So Chazal did all their investigations, and they assessed that, yeah, that it's proper to return the shtar chov to the malveh. So when he comes knocking on our door, no further clarification is required. Obviously, he's allowed to collect the land. That's why there's such a stark contrast between the case of get and the case of shtar chov. Okay, then we said shichruri avadim. Said if you found a shtar shichur in the street, right, a bill that said that Eved Kanani was emancipated, so we had all discussion also about whether you can return that to the Eved, to the masters. The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Matzah shtar shichur bashuk, bizman shaharav modeh yachzer, le'eved ein harav modeh lo yachzer lo lezevelos. Again, this is basically the same idea, but in a different application. If the master concedes that, yes, he wrote the shtar shichur, Shechur, he delivered the Shtar Shechur, and the Eved must have lost it, you can return it to the Eved Kanani, and if the master denies it, he denies writing it, he denies delivering it, so then you cannot deliver it to either of them. So the Gemara again says, Bizman Shaharav Moden Mia Yachzer Le'Eved, Ve'amai, Nechoshem Akasav Lite Lo Benisan Velo Nasan Lo Atishrei, Ve'azel Avda Ve'kana Nichsen Minisan Ve'atishrei, Ve'azel Harav Zavninu, Umapik Le'le Shechur Dechasav Benisan, Ve'kataraf Lekucho Shalo Kadin. So again, this is basically the same exact question the Gemara is asking again and again and again, but in different contexts. The concern is like this. Let's say the master says, yes, I freed my Eved Kanani. So we said you're allowed to return the Shtar Shechur to the Eved Kanani. The question is why? Why aren't we concerned that the master wrote the Shtar Shechur 6 months before, and now, in other words, but he only delivered it 6 months later in Tishrei, and any property that the Eved Kanani purchased in the interim was not really his, because if he was still an Eved Kanani for those 6 months, we know that Kol Mashakana Eved Kana Rabo, whatever he acquires really belongs to the master, and now what's going to happen is that he's going to end up, the Eved's going to end up repossessing property that was never really his, that really belonged to the master. So the Gemara again has to clarify the parameters of the question. The Gemara again says this question only gets off the ground if you assume that first of all it's considered to be beneficial for an Eved Kanani to be emancipated. This is a famous machlokas that appears in the beginning of Maseches Gittin, but whether we assume that emancipation of an Eved Kanani is considered in the best interest of the Eved Kanani or not. So if you assume that it's a benefit for him to be emancipated, and you also assume, like Abaye, who we already quoted last week, and we're going to continue to quote today as well, that Edov Bachasum of Zachinlo, that once the witnesses sign off on the Shtar, that, in other words, that's what effectuates the acquisition. That's what frees the Eved Kanani, once the Edom sign off. So then the question makes perfect sense, because, in other words, the Shtar that was dated in Tishrei, but might have theoretically been was dated in Nisan, but might not have been delivered until Tishrei. The assumption is that if you think it's in the Eved Kanani's best interest to be emancipated, and the emancipation is effectuated based on the signatures of the Edim, so there's a legitimate concern that the Eved Kanani purchased land in that interim that really should have been in the possession of the master. So this question really does in fact get off the ground. But if you take the other approach of the Gemara in Gittin, that it's actually detrimental for an Eved Kanani to be emancipated, and that his emancipation is not effectuated until the time the Shtar Shechur is physically delivered, because of the famous principle of Ein Chavin La'adam Ela B'fanav, in contrast to Zachin La'adam Shelo B'fanav, if you're causing something detrimental to a person, they need to be present, and then you have to acknowledge the actual acquisition occurring. So then this question doesn't get off the ground at all, because the Eved Kanani is not considered emancipated until he physically receives the Shtar Shechur, and any possessions that he might have purchased beforehand obviously are going to belong to the master. So the Gemara says, no. Again, the Gemara gives the exact same answer we've been giving in all the other cases. When the Eved Kanani comes and demands to repossess any possessions, property, land that he bought, we're gonna tell him the same story. You need to bring evidence when you receive the Shtar Shechur. It's not enough to follow the date on the Shtar, because again, it's possible that the Shtar was written 6 months before it was actually delivered. You need to, you know, provide evidence with Edom or something else when the Shtar was actually delivered. Okay, then the Mishnah said, Daitiki matan, Tanu Rabbanan, Ezo hi Daitiki, Datehe lemeikam v'lios, she'emes nechasav l'flon. So a Daitiki is basically just a fancy word for a will. It basically says that this Shtar is going to stand in place, that if the father dies, so then if Reuven dies, the possessions are going to go to Shimon or to whoever, to his children or to somebody else. And then matana kol shekasuv bo mehayom uliachar misa. When it comes to a shtar matana, so the only way in which you can return a shtar matana that you found in the street is if it specifies that the matana will only go into effect from today and after I die. So asks the Gemara, Alma iksiva mehayom uliachar misa hu dekane ve'ilo lo kane. That seems like such a stretch. I mean, most of the time, if Reuven wants to give a matana to Shimon, the odds that he's going to write in the shtar, the gift is only going to go into effect after I die. I mean, most people don't write a shtar matana like that. So the only time you can ever return a lost shtar matana is if Reuven added that caveat into the shtar. It seems a little bit far-fetched. So the Gemara says, no. Amar Abai hachi ka'amar, ezo hi matnas bari, shehi kemanash chimera, delo kane ala liachar misa, kol shekasu ba mehayom uliachar misa. The Gemara adds a caveat. The Gemara says what the Mishnah meant to say was that when it comes to a matnas bari is a gift given by a regular, healthy person. That gift is only going to have the status and go into effect like a matnas shchivmera. Again, a matnas shchivmera is a gift that's given by a person on his deathbed. There are special unique halachos, which we're going to talk a lot about when we get to Maseches Bava Basra about, but the only time that we view a matnas bari like a matnas shchivmera in the sense that the acquisition only goes into effect Liachar Misa is if it's written explicitly in the Shtar. I mean, like this. When it comes to a Matna Shchim Mara, let's say a guy on his deathbed wants to give a gift to someone, that gift only goes into effect when the person actually dies. When it comes to a Matna Shchim Mara, if a regular healthy person is giving you a gift, the assumption is the gift goes into effect right now, unless he specifically says it's only going into effect after I die. So it's almost the opposite of what we thought initially. In other words, a Matana given by a healthy person, the baseline assumption is it goes into effect right away. In contrast, when it comes to a Matna Shchim Mara, that only goes into effect once the person actually dies. Okay, then the Gemara says, Taima de lo amar tenu, ha amar tenu nosnin. So we gave a caveat in the Mishnah to all of these cases about when are you allowed to return or not allowed to return some kind of a shtar or a get or a shtar chov or a shtar shechr, whatever the case was that you found in the street. So we said that's assuming that the person on the other end of the shtar, whether it's the ex-husband or it's the lova or it's, you know, whoever, the master of the Eved Kanani, if he never said the word tenu, he never said, yeah, you can give the shtar to my ex-wife, to the Eved Kanani, whoever, but if he said the word tenu, the implication is that if he said, yes, you can deliver the get to my ex-wife, you can deliver the shtar shechur to my Eved Kanani, whatever it is, then you can give it. The problem is, says the Gemara, Urim Minhu, Matza Daitakos Apotakos Umatanos, Afa Pisha Shnehem Modin, Lo Yachzer, Lo Lazev, Lo Lazet. We have a Braisa that seems to contradict this. The Braisa says, let's say a guy's walking in the street, and he finds some wills, he finds what's called an apotiki, right? An apotiki we've discussed many times in the past, is basically when you designate a specific piece of property as a form of repayment for a loan. So he finds a shtar that says that Reuven borrowed $1,000 from Shimon, and I'm hereby designating property A that I own to as a form of repayment. Or he finds a shtar matana, whatever it is. So in all of these cases, the Braisa says you cannot return the shtar to either party. And the Braisa doesn't make any sort of exceptions or caveats or carve-outs for a case where he says, yes, you can return the shtar. So in other words, that inference seems to be contradicted by the Braisa. So the Gemara says, no. Amar Rabbi Abba bar Mama lo kashya, habivari v'habishchiv mera, masnisin de katane ha'amar tenu nosnin, bishchiv mera devar mihadarhu, de'amrinan ma'ika le'meymar, dilma kasva me'ikar alahai, ve'imlich v'lo yohava nihalei, v'hadar kasva le'inishacharina v'yohave nihalei, hashta kohadar be'mehahu de'yohave nihalei, ibe ma'naz bari yohave le'y, le'slei pseida, d'chinafka tarte basreisa zoche, de'hahadar be'mika maisa, ibe ma'naz shchiv mera nami yohava nihalei, le'spa pseida, de'basreisa zoche, the kahadar bin mikamaisa. This is a very long-winded answer. We'll see. Actually, this entire daf pretty much was, according to many Rishonim, was actually written by the Savarim. The Savarim were the people who lived after the times of the Gaonim. I'm sorry. After the Amorim, before the Gaonim, and they usually wrote in very, very long-winded answers. So this Gemara is going to stand out as a little bit different in terms of, in other words, textually speaking. But the bottom line is what the Gemara is trying to say here is that there's a contrast between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Mishnah that says that if the person who lost the shtar said tenu, yes, you can deliver, you can return the get or the shtar shikr, whatever it is, so that we say that you can give it back, that's referring to a shchimra, because a shchimra, a guy on his deathbed, has the ability to retract and recant again before he dies. Why? What's the logic? Because he could say the following. In other words, the assumption is that, let's say initially Reuven is on his deathbed and he says, okay, I want to give a gift to Shimon before I die, and then he decides to recant, he retracts that notion, and then he says, you know what, I'm going to write to Levi, I'm going to give Levi the matana instead, and now he wants to recant from that as well. So the Gemara says like this: in other words, if we're talking about a matnas bari, a guy who's healthy, so then we can give both Shimon and Levi the shtar, because no one's losing out, because the assumption is that Reuven retracted from his initial assumption. He retracted from wanting to give the gift to Shimon, and now he's only giving the gift to Levi. On the other hand, if it's a matna shchimra, if it's a case where he's on his deathbed, so you can also give both shtare matana to Shimon and Levi, because again, he's not going to be losing out for the same reason, because it's going to go to Levi, the latter party. The assumption being is that Reuven retracted or recanted his gift that he was going to give to Shimon. On the other hand, the Gemara says, "Ki katani bevraisa afal pi sheshneha modim lo yachzer lo lazev lo lazev bevari the lav bar miadarhu the amrina the dilma kasva lahay meikara the imlech v'lo yohavale v'hadar kasva leinishacharina v'yohavale hashda kahadar be mehahudi yohavale v'savar mihadar lo matzila hadarnavi emar lehu da ana lahaya hafta v'nihadru nihalek sava ki heichi dechi mapik haik sava the kadim zachavehu." So in other words, the concern is like this. In the case of the Braisa, the Gemara says that even though they both concede, they both agree to the fact that this was a shtar that I was going to give over, whether it was a get or a shtar shuk or whatever it was, you're not allowed to return it to either party. Why not? So the Gemara says, in other words, if we're talking about a bari, a guy who's a regular healthy individual, so then he does not have the ability to retract what he said. Once he handed over the get, once he handed over the shtar shuk, once he handed over the shtar matana, he cannot retract. Why not? Because we're concerned for the following. Let's say Reuven wanted to give a gift initially to Shimon. Then he retracts, and he doesn't end up giving the gift to Shimon. And then he says, okay, I'm going to give the gift to Levi. And then he writes the shtar to Levi, but he says, okay, but I, in other words, in this case, he actually gave the gift to Levi, but then after giving Levi the gift, he decides he wants to retract from that gift, so he knows he can't do anything about it because he already gave Levi the gift. So he says, you know what, I'm going to basically go tell Beis Din that I actually authorized Shimon to get the gift, so they're going to give Shimon back the original shtar matara that I retracted on, and then what's going to happen is that he'll get the gift back, and then I'll be able to divide the matara with him. I'll at least get something back. So because of that concern, the Gemara says, So we basically turn to Reuven and say, listen, if you're being honest here, that you really meant to give the gift initially to Shimon, you were just hedging and going back and forth about whether you wanted to give the gift, you need to write up a new shtar. We're not going to let you just fall back and rely on the previous shtar that you wrote, because you might be trying to pull some kind of shtick here. You might be trying to say, listen, I really wanted to give the gift to Shimon because you didn't want to give it to Levi because you want to split part of the gift for Shimon. So because of that concern, we say, listen, if you're really truly being honest here, you have to write up a brand new shtar matana that says that you're actually giving Shimon the gift. So asks the Gemara, Maskefla Rav Zvirva Ha'idi V'idi Daitakos Ketane. So Rav Zvit says, hang on a second, this whole long-winded answer we just gave in the Gemara, this contrast, this distinction between whether it's a Matnas Bari or it's a Matnas Shchimara, or it depends on whether he retracted before he gave the gift or after he gave the gift. All of these distinctions, asks Rav Zvit, doesn't seem to fit textually into the Mishnah, because the Mishnah was discussing a contrast of two cases of a Daitiki, of a will. So this whole concern about giving a Matana doesn't seem to get off the ground. We're talking about two totally different topics. We're talking about giving a will, finding a shtar of a will, as opposed to finding a shtar matana. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela amar of zvid, ha v'ha b'shchimera, v'lo kashya, ha bey v'ha b'vrei. Masnizin deka amar tenu nosnin b'didei, devar mihadarhu, damrinan, inami yohadole, inashacharina, leis papseda, deka ma uvasra, basra zache, deha hadar b'nikamam, Again, very, very long-winded answer, but the very basic point in the Gemara is, it's basically the same idea. The only difference in this answer is that we're inserting a case of a father and a son. Meaning, in the case of a daitiki, of a will, so what happened was the following, is that, in other words, initially the father said, okay, I wanted to give a gift over to Reuven, and then the father died, and now the son is claiming that he actually meant to give the gift over to Shimon. So it's, again, in other words, conceptually it's the same idea as the previous Gemara, but it solves the textual problem from the case before about the Daitiki, because we could still be talking about a case of a will, but conceptually it's the same thing. We turn to the son and we say, listen, if it's really true that your father meant to give the will or the gift, whatever it was, over to Reuven, you have to write up a brand new shtar. And again, that solves the issue of thinking that maybe really the son is in cahoots with the other guy so he could split the value of the will or the item or the gift or whatever. We tell him to write up a new shtar. Again, that also solves the textual problem from the Gemara before. Okay, now finally, the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Matza Shovar, Bizmansha Isha Moda Yachzir Labat. So again, basically the same idea, but a different case. Now we're talking about a shover. A shover is a receipt. So let's say, for example, you find a receipt that says that Reuven paid his ex-wife Rachel the value of a ksuba. So normally, if you find a receipt, if Reuven's holding on to a receipt, he's obviously not going to have to pay the ksuba because he has evidence that he already paid up. So now, Shimon's walking in the street and he finds a receipt. So if Rachel admits that, yes, Reuven, my husband, paid up the ksuba already, we're good, all our debts have been settled, so then obviously he can return to Reuven. But if she denies it, she says no, he never paid anything, then he can't return the shomer to either party. So the Gemara again says, Bizman Sha Isha Moda Mias Yachzer Labat, Velechash Dilma Kasol Yitin Benisan Velo Nasna Tishrei, Velazla Zvanta Lichsuba Betova Sana Minisan Tishrei, Umapik Lele Shomer Dichsiv Benisan Velasa Lemitra Vakufa Shalokadin. So the Gemara asks basically the exact same question we've been asking this entire daf in a slightly different form, which is like this. Even in a case where the wife admits that the ex-husband paid up the ksuba, why are you allowed to return the receipt back to the ex-husband? Why aren't we concerned that maybe the receipt was written 6 months before it was actually delivered, and we're concerned that in the interim, the wife went ahead and she sold the privileges for her ksuba? We've discussed this in the past. It's going to come up again in Maseches Makos in a few months from now, or in a year from now, whatever it is. Basically, the Mishnah tells us that in theory, a wife has the ability to sell her ksuba, but when a person purchases the rights for a ksuba, it's basically a form of gambling because he doesn't know if he's going to actually collect, right? Again, there are always three outcomes. Either the wife dies first, the husband dies first, or the couple gets divorced. So in two out of three of those outcomes, the wife collects the ksuba. In a case where she predeceases the husband, obviously she doesn't collect anything. So if Reuven wants to go ahead and purchase Rachel's ksuba, so Reuven is gambling on that. So let's say Rachel's ksuba is worth $20,000. No one's going to pay $20,000 for a $20,000 ksuba. They're going to have to factor in whatever the risk is, and they're going to pay whatever it is. I don't know, they're going to pay $10,000, whatever the amount is, for the value of the ksuba. So in other words, let's say, for example, the wife went ahead, and in that interim period from the time the receipt was written until it was delivered, she sold off her ksuba, and now the guy who bought her ksuba, after the couple gets divorced, he comes knocking on the ex-husband's door and says, listen, I want all the stuff that I just purchased, all the rights that I purchased from this ksuba, I want to collect. So the concern is that he's going to end up collecting unlawfully from property that was never meant to be sold off, from property that really, in other words, that the husband had already settled his debt from 6 months prior. So the Gemara says, you're right. Amar Rava, Shma Mina, Isa Lidishmuel, to Amar Shmuel, Hamocher Shtarchov Lachavero, V'chazer U'mechalo Machol, V'afilu Yorish Mochel. So comes the Gemara, comes Rava and says, you see from the fact that we're not concerned with this idea that maybe the guy who bought the ksuba is going to come and they're going to end up collecting unlawfully, that we subscribe to a famous statement of Shmuel that appears in several places in Shas, which says the following. Let's say Reuven has a Shtarchov that says that Shimon owes him $1,000. He lent Shimon $1,000. He wants to now turn around and sell that shtar chov to Levi. Now, again, as you just said a second ago with the ksuba, Levi is never going to pay $1,000 for an $1,000 IOU because at best he's going to break even. So let's say he pays $700 for the $1,000 IOU, and then Reuven turns around and says, by the way, I'm being mochel the debt to Shimon. So basically, there's nothing Levi can do about that because the obligation that Shimon had was only exclusively to Reuven. It's not to the guy that holds the piece of paper. It's to the person that he actually borrowed the money from. So in theory, Reuven can be mochel the debt even after he sells the IOU to Shimon. And not only can Reuven be mochel the debt, let's say Reuven dies, his yorshim can also be mochel the debt theoretically. So the Gemara says that it must be, the only way to make sense of this is to subscribe, is to invoke this statement of Shmuel that once you sell off a shtar chov, you have the ability to be mochel. So the same thing here is going to be true as well, that in the case of the ksuba, theoretically the wife had the ability to be mochel. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Abai yamar afilu tema leisei l'dishmuel, hacha b'may askina b'sheshtar ksuba yotzei mitachas yada. So comes Abai and says, no, you don't necessarily have to subscribe to Shmuel's statement. You can say that the case in which we're allowing the guy to come and collect is in a case where the wife in other words, the wife actually produces a copy of the ksuba. If the wife actually produces a copy of the ksuba, so then we're no longer concerned that she sold off her ksuba, because look, she has a copy of the ksuba in her possession. So then the Gemara says, but maybe not. The Rava Amar im yishum shtar ksuba chay shina lishtei ksubas. Rava can deflect that by saying, okay, maybe there were multiple ksubos written. The Abaye Amar chada lishtei ksubas lo chay shinan. The od shover bizmano tarif. Abaye l'tamei da Amar eido bachasum of zachin lo. And Abaye will deflect that argument by saying, first of all, it's very unlikely, it's very uncommon to write more than one ksuba. We also discussed this in the past. And more than that, says Abaye, that a shover, a receipt, you collect based on the date that's written on the receipt itself. And again, this conforms with Abaye's statement that we started the daf with today, which is Eidav Bachasum of Zachilo. All of those acquisitions, all of those changes in status to affect a divorce, to affect an emancipation of an Eved Kenani, all the cases that we mentioned, according to Abaye, are all effectuated based on the signatures of the Eidim. Once the Eidim sign off on the bottom, that's when the acquisition, that's when the change in status occurs. And therefore, you follow the date that's written on the shover. Even if it turns out that the receipt was only delivered 6 months later, the ksuba was only paid out 6 months later, it doesn't matter, because according to Abaye, that divorce was the payment for the ksuba was essentially effectuated 6 months prior, and therefore any concern that maybe the guy who bought the rights of the ksuba off of the woman was in play, that concern is valid, because the wife had no right to sell off the ksuba anymore at that point, because she didn't have a ksuba to sell, because the husband had already paid everything up. Okay.